Welcome to the session after lunch. Hopefully nobody falls asleep, but it's an interesting topic. So this is a session on big data in insurance and impact on actuarial profession. So first of all, a bit of housekeeping. The session will run, as you know, for about 40 minutes. Presentation is about 20, 25 minutes, and then we'll take questions. If you do want to ask a question, please come up to the mic and just state your name, and the session is being recorded, so just speak slowly and clearly. So we've heard from presenters this morning, from Estelle, mentioning big data as a challenge from CEOs, and also Jeff identifying data as one of the challenges for the insurers. So I'd like to introduce the two speakers today, Dmitry Simonovich, who's completed PhD in computer science, is working as a data scientist, first data scientist that I've met, with the Commonwealth Bank. Prior to that, he was a machine learning researcher with NICTA, National Lab, specializing in information and telecommunication technology. He had begun his career in general insurance, has been a member of the Institute over 10 years. Dmitry is broadly interested in the big data technologies and insurance methodology. And Solay Balepan, who has had roles in general insurance pricing and reserving, primarily in commercial line space. She's currently working in strategic role for a CEO. Her professional interests include strategy and innovative design. Please welcome the two speakers.
So, good afternoon and welcome to our session. So I would probably preface the session with saying that the opinions and views in this paper are our own and don't reflect our respective employers. So today we're going to discuss a popular topic, also in insurance, big data. We're going to cover our understanding of the insurance industry view of big data. We're going to have a look at consumer technology companies. And we're going to be a bit cliched, and by these I'm referring to your Google, your Facebook, your Amazon, and how they view big data. And we're going to look closely at their methods and approaches to big data and what it would look like in insurance, and we'll be concentrating on the personal lines space. And finally, we'll consider what are the implications for actuaries. So our general understanding and interpretation of what many companies are doing, big data projects in insurance, as to what they're trying to do, is to bring all the information into one spot to ultimately obtain a comprehensive customer view. If you go to a big data vendor and you ask for their advice about what to do, their advice would probably be in building a so-called data lake. This includes bringing data together from many systems, and the complexity of which depends on how many legacy systems there are, the maturity of the business, as well as existing system integration and migration. You could say that these big data projects are an evolution of the traditional data warehouse. So in a data lake, you would keep all historical data and nothing would be thrown away. And provided you have captured the specific data and information and it's adequately stored, you should be able to generate reports and queries to answer questions you may have. Whereas in the data warehouse, it may be thrown out or not included, and queries that you anticipated you might not be able to answer. And also the question that I'd like to ask you is, well, maybe rhetorical, how many people are able to do actuarial analysis strictly from their data warehouse? So the motivation behind creating a data lake is to give you a view of the customer so you can carry out tasks such as improved risk pricing or understanding aspects of customer behaviour. So now we're going to look at big data from a consumer technology point of view. We see that there's quite a difference and a gap between these consumer technology companies and insurance regarding their approach to big data. So what are the distinguishing features of big data thinking in consumer technology? So we're going to delve deeper into each of these topics. So it's a software focus, where the system or the website is the key conduit for how the customer interacts with the organisation. database decisions. This is where analytics is all about live testing. And given the digital nature of these organizations, it's easy for system changes, such as new product features, to be tested and then to understand the impact and be able to measure these changes. Programmatic interfaces, such as modularizing product design and distribution, and creating platforms to enable third parties to drive increased customer engagement. So an example of this is Facebook. So I don't know if you all remember about the poking feature and how the super pokes were actually developed by third parties. And then systems architecture, again, given the data-driven nature of the organization, you have to be able to build systems that permit rapid iterations, and this is also provides a critical basis for market testing. And finally, the information behind the sharing of de-identified data, such as customer information. As we heard in the plenary sessions this morning, it's all about leveraging other people's data. And in the online space, we see them as very sophisticated players in terms of their infrastructure on this. So we'd like to point out how a consumer technology company would apply their big data ideas and methodologies to insurance. So whilst we acknowledge that insurance and consumer tech aren't exactly one-to-one, we're going to try and translate some plausible interpretations of how you would use consumer technology big data approach to personal lines. So from inception, these consumer technology companies, they've been focused on the digital channel. So as I mentioned before, the system or the website is key to how the customer interacts with the organization. For a consumer technology company, it's not quite easy or sometimes impossible to call their hotline. So the focus is on the software to deliver the customer experience as readily and easily as possible through the website. So what would a consumer technology approach applied to insurance look like? So the product would be seen as a website, rather than different parts of the organisation, perhaps working in silos, so such as content or marketing or the PDS team or pricing. It'd be a more holistic approach and the team working together on all aspects of the customer experience. Also, because of the available programming expertise, often more than half the staff are programmers in these companies, they'd be able to estimate how difficult or easy something would be to implement and run, rather than IT being seen as an afterthought for implementation. On the analytics side, again, because of the programming expertise, what may be seen as an ad hoc task may be viewed as a new metric that would be given the time to assess and understand the needs to build a solution. Also, generally in these companies, there is a general drive towards automation of business processes. So another thing about consumer technology companies is that they extensively use open source software and have a preference for this over vendors, given, again, they have the expertise in their organisations to do this. It can also encourage collaboration and improvement of your software with other organisations, but these may be components that aren't necessarily core to your business. There is, of course, a balancing act between sharing and keeping competitive advantages internally. The reduced cost of vendors will also assist in reducing operational costs. So now we move on to experimentation. Whilst insights can be drawn from observational data, it may be of limited applicability to current customer preferences or behaviour. So you can see that being able to conduct some live testing would be seen as a more appealing approach. To give you an example from insurance, you can estimate the risk premium on observational data, but it's more difficult to assess an impact on the loss ratio from the rate change. And so it's generally recognised that price testing is quite helpful in this context. This idea of live testing is applicable to all product changes. With market testing, it is important to record the impact of changes and assess whether something is working or not. However, to do that, you need to understand exactly what you're going to measure and the metrics required. From there, you can then work out how big the experiment needs to be so that your results are statistically significant, and also consider how you would best implement the test. Also, being able to learn from the results and build on top of what you have can give you a substantial improvements over time. So for consumer technology companies, they have a discipline and a common framework in terms of experimentation. They would be flexing many different features and factors, and their approach wouldn't be significantly different between premium optimization or website A/B testing. They would also have an understanding of how the different experiments interact and affect each other. So I thought it'd be a good idea to run through an example of what website optimization is. So this is quite a famous example from Obama's 2008 campaign. This is before he had grey hair. When visitors went to the website, they were shown a different combination of three images or three videos and four different red buttons. So it was join us now, learn more, sign up now, and sign up. So the metrics they were using to measure the success was the sign-up rate. That is, the number of people signing up divided by those who saw that particular image button combination. So you can imagine when you're running any kind of marketing campaign or anything in an organisation, you'll have those in senior management or anyone really with a really strong opinion of what they think is best. And actually, before they ran this experimentation, the campaigners actually heavily favoured one of the videos. So really, you need to test who will be right. So what were the results? The winning combination was actually the family image and the button that said learn more. The winning variation had a sign-up rate of 11.6% compared to the original page, which was just that image, of about 8%. So this was a 40% improvement in the sign-up, which they translated into an additional $60 million in donations. So what would experimentation look like in insurance? You could experiment on rate change, new product options, default product configuration, a direct marketing campaign, or website optimization, like we demonstrated before. And what metric would you target? Well, with the Obama campaign, they had a clear one, but we think in insurance you would probably need a mix of metrics to look at, such as conversion, click-through rates, retention, net promoter score, and approximations to customer lifetime value. Whilst it would be appealing to look at just one, just because you have a high click-through rate on your website doesn't necessarily mean you'll have a high conversion rate, which can then flow onto other metrics such as retention. So it'd probably be a good idea to look at a blend or a weighted average based on what you believe is most important for your organisation. So now I'll hand over to Dimitri.
Thank you. So onto the metrics. Sometimes people talk about some kind of omnibus metrics like customer lifetime value that's meant to be the this absolute thing which you can apply to kind of to any problem. But when you think about really customer lifetime value, it's very, very similar to things like, margin on services accounting in life insurance. And to give you a sort of caricature of how, that goes down is, before the close of the accounts, people spend, 10 weeks, making tiny changes to their assumptions to make sure that the final result isn't crazy. Well, I'm not sure that's the caricature of our life insurance colleagues. So it's extremely sensitive to assumptions, and you really want to have simpler and more robust metrics, but you want to balance customer engagement and short-term revenue. But estimates of long-term revenue as the metrics in the experimentation, will seem fairly hopeless, at least at present. Maybe better understanding will emerge. Moving on, the other sort of big part of, thinking around data in the, web space is the creation of basically modularizing your software or your product offering, through and communication between the modules handled through sort of application programming interfaces or APIs. So essentially what you do, you create a platform for other developers to actually go and create customer experiences. So I mentioned earlier, on Facebook, right, initially it was fun to see what your primary school friends have been up to. But, you know, it doesn't really have the lasting value. And it's really all the, you know, extremely silly applications like, you know, farm management or zombies, you know, that really kept people engaged. And all of that has come from third parties, okay? None of the popular content on Facebook was really developed by Facebook itself. So that's, yeah, and in general, it's very hard to expect, you know, ongoing innovation within any one organization. So in insurance context, the APIs, you know, might be really, you know, providing a way for, you know, brokers, underwriting agencies, however you call them, some sort of third parties, right, to assemble products, okay? So you expose various components, and then they can, you know, write a bit, there's a bit of code, you know, where they get some kind of key, and then they basically just do a, like, remote service call, and, you know, policy is bound. Okay, so people don't access product creation or claims management through the, you know, graphical interface that, or a web form that you've created for them. It is exposed at a lower level, and you enable innovation around how that material is presented. And I mean, you can clearly, once you get into that mindset, you can dramatically drive down the cost of endorsements. Like if you look at your, you know, mobile phone company, for example, you can turn roaming, international roaming on or off by switching, you know, like by flipping a little thing inside the app. There is no reason why you couldn't flip some aspects of your insurance policy coverage on or off using the same mechanism, right? In fact, you should be able to sit there and click it on and off all day, right? And the system should be able to cope with it. That's what customers will be increasingly expecting, okay? And of course, there is also a, as I mentioned again, the story how you can outsource innovation, right? It's not the old stodgy insurance company, but, you know, some other people use this to package it up in some ways we can frankly, you know, not really think about ourselves. The next kind of aspect, which is really relates to all the previous ones, is that you have to have software systems that really support the business model. Which means basically rapid prototyping, market testing, you know, APIs, you know, your mainframe system will not be able to cope with people, you know, triggering the, you know, the switch inside the app on or off, you know, very likely. So there has to be some really serious rethinking about how the enterprise systems, you know, are set up. If you look at it more broadly, there are these big data solutions like Hadoop or Spark that kind of enable analytics. So they store, aggregate data from multiple systems, allow you to run queries and so on. I think where a lot of the kind of mindshare is going in that space is really combining those solutions with your transactional databases. So a transactional database gets kind of broken apart, different internal components become modularized, and essentially you have something like Hadoop, but actually all your production system used that directly in some sense as a data store, and you have some nice properties like, yeah, it's impossible to actually delete any piece of data, it is only invalidated and so on. There are links in our paper, so if you're interested, you can follow that. So far we've really talked about just kind of like the technological aspect, so what technology can enable. But obviously, yeah, bringing in additional data sources is a big topic. It is sort of in the case of a traditional carrier, it is really almost orthogonal to the rest of it because, well, frankly, there isn't any other data sources other than your web server logs or, you know, what. Maybe you can strike a deal with somebody. In case of, you know, if you have a horizontally integrated organization, so your banks or, again, the, you know, reward cards, reward programs, there is potentially value in, you know, getting a unified customer view there, and you may be able to use that for pricing, risk selection, marketing, and so on. One place where traditional insurers can do something is basically by changing product design. Okay, telematics, home automation. I mean, with telematics, it's quite remarkable in conversation about telematics. You don't hear it very often, but absolutely, the future of telematics isn't a box you plug in, but it's the it's your in-car entertainment system running Android and actually being connected to the internet all the time. I mean, that is absolutely the future of telematics, and it's not hard to envision the situation where you buy a policy, by installing an app, and you get reminders, and then basically this whole world of stuff you can do there once that's in place. And, I mean, that's happening right now. And of course, in addition to this, there's also various, data matching services or brokers. I think we know who they are in Australia. I mean, credit bureaus are another potential source of that kind of information. I mean, with Australian credit reporting, it is not really great for insurance purposes, but maybe with the move to positive reporting, that will change. Census is obviously another kind of thing. All this kind of conversation around additional data sources and bringing them in is really very, very incomplete if it doesn't include a discussion of so-called real-time bidding platforms and what actually goes on in the online advertising space. Okay, there are basically very short time, really, since 2008, the infrastructure of really quite amazing sophistication, which easily rivals anything seen on HFT, has been built up. And, basically the ad inventory on variety of sites, is auctioned off in real time. There are sub-auctions being spawned for the information from the tracking networks. So basically, whenever you visit various websites, websites can participate in tracking networks. They deposit cookies in your browser. So whenever you arrive to a new site, they can access essentially a history of your website visits. Okay, it may be incomplete, but it's there. Another very big piece of it is retargeting. In online advertising, there are really only one customer feature that really works reliably, and that's revealed customer intent. So that's when you basically type in a keyword into a search window. It means you're interested at that point in time. And the other aspect of that, if you looked at a particular item somewhere in a shop, that's valuable information, means you're interested, and people try to get advertising for similar or exactly the same product to follow you around through the web. The infrastructure to support it is very complex. It's really, from the point of view of the companies that own valuable customer data, it's probably better to actually participate in these markets or in these auctions rather than go through like various third party or brokers who introduce probably considerable inefficiencies. Certainly it seems like we will see this unification between online advertising infrastructure and, any efforts to do customer sharing in the, with this kind of traditional organizations. That brings us to, where does it leave actuaries in this picture that we've described? If you look at it, right, historically, certainly actuaries have been the people who, certainly a single group of people who knew the most about software, mathematical aspects of analytics, and even the business of insurance. Certainly actuaries were among the very first, business computer users, period. So that's some evidence can be found for that. And now this kind of web consumer technology world, okay, it's all kind of largely, comes out of, United States, Silicon Valley, Seattle, it's all very different. Like, there's no clear place for actuaries in that picture. So it's a data scientist is, you know, an analyst who lives in San Francisco. So some kind of bridge there needs to be found, or otherwise you can see the role of the profession will be kind of pushed more towards really the compliance specialist or working on the platform side and handling the back-end stuff, to keep the regulators happy and so on, rather than really participating in these developments. Any discussion about what to do for the actuarial profession, inevitably starts and ends with setting up more exams. That's been my experience. Perhaps setting up more exams isn't really the solution, but it is important to, there's this really big movement on massively open online courses. Actually, I wrote an article for the Actuaries magazine a few months ago, if you would like to have a look, which gives quite a few examples of that. So it's possible to really try to leverage some kind of brand value and recognition and kind of respect that actuaries have and, try to be a little bit more open-minded and looking into extending accreditation to other materials that are not necessarily delivered by the institute itself or by university partners. So that at the moment there is more, like in the last 3 years, there's been more than 1,000, full university courses, put up with permissive licenses. It is not too difficult to set up exams for some of them and offer accreditation and so on, because still accreditation is something that is quite lacking in that whole open education space. That's one obvious source of opportunity. It's exams again. It's not really very relevant. Not really up to scratch again. Evolving university partnerships will be challenging. Something needs to be done. I mean, if people are interested, happy to have a chat about it later on. Thank you very much. That's all from me.
Thanks very much. That's fascinating stuff. So we'll just take questions from the floor. Got anyone? I might kick things off. Just on the projects of big data and data analytics, do you think that's limited to larger companies, those who can leverage either their own data or can purchase data from elsewhere, or how do small general insurers or smaller companies get into the same space and develop those projects?
One aspect of big data is, again, this kind of system integration, getting all information in one place. I mean, from that point of view, smaller companies may not have as many legacy systems, may have simpler sort of landscape in terms of architecture. So maybe there the value is smaller. I mean, in terms of getting into the other aspects of big data that we've outlined, I mean, some kind of data partnerships are a possibility, trying to get into this kind of platform plays. Maybe they are less invested in the keeping the existing distribution channels happy. Maybe they can try to create these APIs or so on. So it depends on how you define it, but I think smaller companies can definitely do something.
I think it's also similar to what Jeff mentioned in the plenary session before, where it might be becoming more, insurers are becoming more like a manufacturer rather than a provider of capital, and you sort of outsource, the interface to a more nimble entrepreneurial player.
Any questions? Yeah, just come up to the microphone, please.
Thanks for the presentation. I thought it was really good. One question that I had was I wrote down that it's up to insurers to really provide that platform and allow third parties to build on top of it. One thing I wanted to know was how much scope and how much opportunity do you think there are for insurers to build on other people's platforms, and become like the super poke people, you know, come in and build on something already existing and provide that, I suppose, more engaging technology over the top.
Well, I guess it's hard to say. I mean, I think for more natural role for established insurers would be the platform. Now for people in the insurance industry, right? Like traditionally, if you had some good idea, you saw a niche in the market that wasn't served, you'd set up an underwriting agency or maybe a niche broker. So I think we'll potentially see more technology centered plays, you know, around that. I think that would be my answer. Yeah. Thanks.
No questions?
I've got another one, if that's okay.
From a consumer point of view, at least from my perspective, I want to click on a website, a general insurance website, and get a quote quickly. Yeah. What do you see things changing? I mean, with what you mentioned with Google, when you go through search and it picks up your cookies and it offers you products that you've looked at before, from a general insurance point of view and when buying insurance, do you see any changes to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that cuts across quite a few things there. One way it might be possible to think of some kind of essentially a remarketing campaign or some kind of situation where if you see that people are interested in insurance online, right, you somehow target those people more. And I mean, with the really really high cost of online ads like on Google AdWords for insurance, right? If you can be smarter from the, on who do you actually reach out to? I mean, there's some potential cost savings there for insurers if they, yes, by making sort of more sophisticated, online advertising plays and becoming more engaged in that space. But that's kind of a really small. Yeah, small aspect of it. From the customer experience point of view, if you look at the current websites in Australia for like basically getting quotes and so on, they're really not very great, okay? And I'm sure that a lot of people abandon quotes and don't complete them and so on, or maybe they don't get as many quotes as they would like. So basically some extensive testing around that might help to both improve, conversions for a particular insurer and actually surprisingly improve customer experience. That's another possibility there, but it's very kind of broad. Yeah, broad area.
Oh, it's
right. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Oh.
There's a question here.
Can you comment on the anxieties that might be particular to insurance situations when purchasing people's purchasing data about people? Recently, there was a bit of a scandal in the UK when the Stapledean Actuarial Society, which is a society for actuarial students, somebody there used some data that was purchased from the NHS, which had lots of anonymised, interesting medical data. And the newspapers got hold of this story, which should have not really been much of a story at all, but they made a big thing about it, got it completely out of context, but it did tap into the anxieties that people didn't like the idea that insurance companies were using and doing something with the data, particularly pricing products once they had looked at medical records, for example, even though they were completely anonymized.
Well, I guess it's happening. It's just it might not be public or it might not be widespread as to the understanding of it.
But I think in general, I mean, you're absolutely right. There needs to be some kind of robust public debate around the whole privacy and data sharing issues. I mean, the current legislation is perhaps quite a bit behind what can be done about the very notion on what it means for something to be anonymized, because a lot of those anonymized data sets can in practice can sometimes be de-anonymized or in fact frequently. It's very much in uncharted territory. The only hope, you know, people will keep trying things, and hopefully there will be some intelligent public debate that will later get reflected in the regulation.
But do you think it might be a particular issue for the insurance company? Because people, if they think that they're getting some good deals from the supermarkets, might not mind terribly much if people know what they've purchased at the shops that week. Whereas, and I think to a certain extent people are aware that it is going on with those sorts of consumer products. The particular scandal which happened with the health ones did actually it get complicated with the whole thing about ethics and the fact that the actuaries were somehow involved, and there was supposed to be a different context to ordinary consumer products there.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right, especially things around kind of medical conditions and medical data. I mean, so some of those things will be more sensitive than others.
Yeah.
Perhaps people seem to be more relaxed about their, you know, like online behavior kind of being tracked. And that actually can potentially reveal a lot about your medical conditions as well in kind of obvious ways. I think we're just in uncharted territory because a lot of this stuff just simply wasn't technologically feasible before. So the questions didn't really arise. But we'll have to see what happens. Thank you.
John. John Duravin, Swiss Re. Dimitri, you mentioned during your presentation the idea of sort of randomly testing people's tendency to purchase policies by varying premium rates. So I can see from an insurer's perspective that's kind of fantastic, because if you've got the price elasticity of demand, you can figure out optimal pricing for your product. But do you see either practical or reputational issues for the insurer in doing that?
No, thanks. That's a good question. I mean, it's something that has already been tried with in a lot of markets, and I guess we probably hard to get a comprehensive picture of who exactly is doing it. I'm sure that at least some companies in Australia who are doing it routinely. In terms of price is really. I think the key message we were trying to get to is that price is kind of one thing that people have tried, you know, testing in insurance. I mean, maybe with some success. However, price may not even be the most important component of the whole offering. You know, it could be exactly how, you know, the quote screens are laid out, or, you know, things like the colors, or, you know, the default product configuration, you know, default options, the default access level, and so on. All those things might be equally important, you know, and you could try to, and there's less perhaps sensitivity around testing those things than the price. Price has a little bit special.
Thank you, and I think we're out of time. Please thank the speakers.